And welcome back. Within the next 15 years, one in five Americans will be over the age of 65. That's when the last of the baby boomers reach the age that is generally used to define older Americans. Medical science will keep a large percentage alive much longer than is currently the case. That is not to say that there won't be major issues confronting the aging population, including health and economic concerns. A recent study here in Missouri indicates a growing worry. That is, as the aging population increases, the number of geriatric specialists to care for them is decreasing. That's among the findings in a recent report from the Missouri Foundation for Health titled Older Adults Health Disparities in Missouri. With me in studio to talk about the findings and other issues facing older Americans is Dr. John Morley, the director of the Division of Geriatric Medicine at St. Louis University School of Medicine. Dr. John, nice to have you with us once again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Don, and it's great to be back.
Give me, if you would, an overview. It's a report of a couple of dozen pages. Give me a basic overview of what the concerns are.
So where we are with geriatrics is that we require specialist people who understand the needs of the frailer older population. It's fine if you're healthy. You most probably can get away with seeing your primary care physician. But as the report and a previous report from the Missouri Foundation have pointed out, we're even losing primary care physicians in Missouri, particularly in the rural areas. But we are really desperately short of healthcare professionals to look after the coming older group of people. So if we take just the doctors, geriatricians, we have 139 geriatricians in Missouri at the moment, and the report predicted that by 2030, when we will have 21% of Missourians being over the age of 65, we need about 558. We train virtually no geriatricians. We used to train about 9 a year at St. Louis University. WashU trains a couple. Columbia trains a couple, Mizzou, and the one or two come out of the campus. So nowhere near the numbers we need to train to get there. And in fact, the numbers that we've had coming to apply has gone down because part of this is that geriatricians are not well paid and people obviously prefer to be well paid.
Does that not sound like a problem that is easily solved?
I don't know that it is easily solved. I think as you get into the report, they're pointing out that there's also a shortage of other health professionals, whether we're looking at advanced practice nurses, physician assistants, or physical therapists, occupational therapists. All of the health professionals are not well trained in geriatrics. So one of the good things is the Bureau of Health Professionals has this year changed what was the long-running geriatric education grants to try and train an interdisciplinary or transprofessional teams who will be able to hopefully do a lot of the work that would have been expected to be done by physicians or advanced practice nurses. That most probably is going to be the only outcome. Alternatively, we just heard about Congress being back in, and if they decide to take the money away from neurosurgeons and cardiologists and give it to geriatricians, we could quickly change the situation because people go where the money is.
So if it's not changed, what happens?
Well, as I say, if it's not changed, we're going to have a real problem with a lot of older people who are very frail, who lack adequate care. And if it was just at the medical level, I think we could fix it. But it's going to be across the board with all the health professionals. Obviously, many more older people are going to go into nursing homes. We already have problems adequately staffing nursing homes, and particularly often with very high-quality staff, because, again, payment for the people who work in nursing homes tends to be low. We don't have adequate physical therapy. Nationwide, there are 1,700 board-certified geriatric physical therapists. And in the metro area, we think there are about 9. That doesn't begin to cover one of the major needs of older people, which is some form of physical exercise to make them stronger when they become frail.
You know, well, we talk about the number of baby boomers coming into this age group, and we're reading about the research and the science that is indicating that before too long, many of us may be living to be as old as 120. It draws me to ask you, are we living too long for our own good, given what you're saying here?
Well, you know, if your quality of life is good, I don't think there's anywhere that's living too long. Let's accept that God decides how long we're going to live. What we can do on earth is try and help people to have a better quality of life. And that's where the geriatrics gerontology comes in, much more than extending life. In fact, many people not trained in geriatrics gerontology spend more time trying to extend life where it is not appropriate, rather than looking at and improving quality of life. And I think most people in the gerontology field understand that there's a time to pull back treatment and allow people to have a good death. So I think that's really part of it. So we need these people to improve quality of life. We're not going to be able to change how long we're going to live. That's something most of us are not going to change.
65 is still being used as kind of the yardstick, if you will, for older Americans. And yet we also hear that 65 is the new 50.
Yeah, well, I think basically as a geriatrician, I tend to think of 70. When I started geriatrics, I used to see people age 60. That was about 30 years ago. Now, I do see some people the age of 60. I sort of laugh when they come to see me because I point out to them I'm older than them and they're looking for a geriatrician to see them through to 90. I'm the wrong person for them to see. But the reality is that most people in their 60s now do not need a geriatrician. There are a few people who are unlucky and get certain diseases and stuff that do need geriatric help. But on the whole, the people who need it are people 70 and beyond, and then very desperately going to be the group over 85. And the Missouri Foundation, when they calculate those numbers, was looking at the needs for people 75 and above.
When we talk, and part of the title of the report is the word disparity. That seems a little bit different to me than what you've been talking about.
So the disparities, the one piece I brought up was the lack of primary care physicians in the rural areas. This is a huge disparity, okay. And in the grant we're going in, we're going to be looking in Adair and Perry County to see if we can find a way to get away without geriatricians. Finding a geriatrician in a rural area is maybe not impossible, but very close to it. Even Kirksville, which has the osteopathic college, the A.T. Still College, does not at the moment have a single geriatrician on their faculty. So it's very hard to find geriatricians in rural areas. So I think we've got to start looking and saying, who is going to replace the geriatrician? Who are we going to train to be able to do the things that we expect a geriatrician to do? That's the one disparity. The other disparity is if you go into the inner city. So if you look in North St. Louis area, there are really virtually no, well, there are no geriatricians who work directly in that area. St. Louis University has a lot. WashU has a few. But other than that, they are not right within the area providing day-to-day geriatric care.
Of course, the disparities in the areas that you're talking about here are not just related to aging, but where the population is poor, all sorts of health issues arise. Mm-hmm. We've done some things on this program indicating that in the poorer zip codes, people live as few as 18 fewer years than do people in more affluent areas.
And that's absolutely true. And on the other hand, many people do live to a ripe old age in those areas, but need lots more support towards the end of their life. And that's what we're lacking. I mean, we have people with dementia, early dementia, who need early recognition. They need to get put into appropriate programs to try and extend the time before they actually finish up needing 24-hour-a-day care. The same sort of thing with frail people. We've got to look and say, can we create the programs that will slow down them getting to the stage where we need 24-hour-a-day care, and there's no one to do it. This population does not exist who's going to look after people 24 hours a day.
And no one to care for them. But there's another issue here, and I know you're familiar with this, and that is it's so darned expensive. If you go into any kind of a care facility, it can cost you tens of thousands of dollars a year. And who's got that?
You know, it's about $52,000 a year at the moment, which is a lot of money. Quite honestly, I've looked at some of the better or richer homes in the St. Louis area, and I can promise you I can't afford to live in them. I say they're really wonderful, but the really high-quality care – I didn't earn enough as a physician to be able to retire to one of those. My daughter, on the other hand, who runs a Medicaid facility, has a bed for me. It's what she claims, the bed that she can never sell in the facility. So therefore, I do have a bed, but it may not be the single best bed in Missouri.
But, you know, but we call this, I think, a geriatric tsunami. All of the things that are out there that are just awful sounding for the future.
I think this is true. And, you know, when I got into geriatrics, what they did at that time is they actually said, if you are in another specialty or if you're in primary care, we will give you a chance to do a year's training in geriatrics and we will allow you to become certified. In other words, you could jump from being a cardiologist to a geriatrician. I did this from endocrinology and became a geriatrician, though I still do endocrinology. But basically, I think that that's going to be part of the answer for the physician. People are only going to jump again, and I hate to push the fact that it's going to be money, but life is driven in the end by money. So we're going to have to change, as they have done in Europe and Australia. They changed what they paid geriatric specialists, and now there's a huge line waiting to be geriatric specialists in Australia and in Europe. People want to be it because they can earn the same as you can earn if you're a cardiologist. It makes a big, big difference.
I wonder why the countries such as those you've just mentioned seem so far ahead of us in a full range of health care issues. We seem to really lag behind.
Well, it's always problematic when we have to talk about this because I think in America, for our top eighth of the population, we have certainly the best health care that money can buy anywhere. The problem is for the rest of the population. And in these other countries, they feel that everybody is entitled to a good standard of health care that is maybe not quite as good as you get if you go to some highly specialized areas such as the Cleveland Clinic or the Mayo Clinic, but quite honestly is pretty good. They also watch very carefully the costs. So here we allow large medicines, come in new medicines at extraordinary amounts, and we tend to go ahead and do them. We have all the best machinery available sitting in our hospitals, much of which doesn't need to be used at the rate it's used. And in fact, one of the beauties and why I love geriatrics is we try to not do most of those things. We find that if you talk to somebody, if you work out what's wrong with them and you look at the cheap medicines, because often they can't afford the expensive ones, you actually get better outcomes. And I think this is part of what they do in other socialized countries. But, you know, socialized medicine is an anathema in the United States.
And, of course, as you heard in the earlier segment, there is yet another attempt to undermine Obamacare that is currently taking place and probably will throughout this legislative session. I wonder, from the geriatric point or perspective, do you see anything in Obamacare that can help to ameliorate the kinds of issues you're talking about?
Well, on the whole, older people have had Medicare, which has been a very good system, and most older people have really good health care coverage. What they don't have is good doctors to look after older people. They have doctors who are excellent to look after the 40-year-olds like you. I'm kidding. Okay, but for
you sure are.
But you know, for the what I'm trying to say is that the physicians are trained to look after people aged 20 to about 60, and they do a wonderful job. But things change as you get older. That 60 to 80 transition period, you have to pick up when adding a medicine for a disease may make the person worse. And those are the sort of things that we've never trained physicians to do. We've not trained physicians to back off and say, well, you can live with this disease if we can just control it. The things that you need much more are exercise, a Mediterranean diet, things that will work better than the expensive medicine.
I want to open our phone lines for folks who'd like to get into this conversation, talking about geriatrics and geriatric issues with Dr. John Morley. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK, if that helps you remember it. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. And lo and behold, Mike in Webster Groves has already signed on. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Don. I was wondering if Dr. Morley could recommend maybe recruiting some doctors from some other countries, geriatric physicians, maybe from Canada or from England, and bring them over here and so we can help the St. Louis community with that.
So the way to look at this is 68% of the people in training at the moment for geriatrics are international medical graduates. So Americans do not want to look after their old people, regardless of what we want to say. We have been recruiting people from other parts of the world. There's little reason for someone, quite honestly, in England or Canada, and certainly not in Europe, to come at this moment in the time to the United States, where they are better paid than they would be as a geriatrician in the United States. So we're not going to be able to recruit people, which we've done successfully in the past, to help with multiple holes in our medical system. We're going to lose that ability if the pay scale stays the same. And everything I'm saying about geriatricians is true for pediatricians as well. So geriatrics is the other side of the scale. But people tend to like to go into pediatrics. There's a subgroup of people who go into medicine because they want to do pediatrics. Much smaller group of people who want to be geriatricians.
Of course, the best way to avoid having to be confronted, each of us, with this problem is to stay healthy. What's your best advice for people who are not yet facing the 65 age for staying healthy?
Well, I don't think it matters what age you are, but certainly starting at 50 and going right through to 100, maybe 100 plus, this may or may not be right, but you need to exercise and you need to do resistance exercise. We're learning that resistance exercise to exhaustion, which means not just sort of pretending to pick up a weight, but exercising till your arm hurts, that's what builds muscle. And a recent paper that we've just accepted for the journal I edit shows that everybody who does that improves their outcomes. Even though they're not always big improvements, they get improvements. So resistance exercise is absolutely key. The Mediterranean diet with excess olive oil. We think we've talked before about the fact that you need at least a liter of olive oil a week if you're living in Spain or Italy, and that is an awful lot of olive oil. Though I will point out to you, you can have a vodka olive oil cocktail, which I actually tried, and it tastes quite nice, but not necessarily the only way to get your olive oil. So I think those things are important. Keeping your brain active. There are lots of brain games out there, but you don't need those. You need to just do things that keep you active. I always like to point out that television is maybe the worst thing that old people can do, and listening to NPR is far, far better than television.
Especially if you're walking while you're listening
or
that
riding
would be a
wonderful.
Bike. Let's take another call. We'll bring in Michael calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
The question I have, or I'd like to just have the good doctor's opinion on this, about continuum of care, especially with end of life and hospice care and getting individuals to be more aware of hospice and the services that hospice could provide as a benefit to geriatric population. I'd like to hear his opinions about that.
So end-of-life care is extraordinarily important. It should start about 5 years before you're going to die, not as it often does in the United States, a couple of weeks when the oncologist gives up. So if we look just at the oncology type of end-of-life, moving it into hospice, it turns out that if you go into an end-of-life care program, hospice program, you're actually going to live about 6 months longer than if you hang out till the last minute trying to get your oncologist to cure the uncurable. And this is almost certainly because of the toxicity of the drugs that they try once they've reached a stage where they have not got you better when they expect to get you better. So end-of-life care, hospice care is extraordinarily important. If you develop an end-of-life condition, whether that's heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, or a cancer, you need to actually be getting palliative care from a geriatrician if you're older, from somebody else who does it if you're younger, to try and make sure that your quality of life is maintained. When we maintain quality of life, people actually live longer. And, you know, there's very good studies that show if people say they feel good, they live longer. So that is so important, and I think people don't recognize that. They tend to look at hospice care, palliative care as giving up. It's not giving up. It's enhancing the quality of your care.
We have a number of calls. I want to get to them, but I have to take a break. But before we do that, very quickly to you, what kills us? What is the biggest killer of old people? Is it cancer? Is it diabetes? Is it falling? What is it?
Well, it's most probably heart disease still is the number one in multiple versions. But in fact, getting old, particularly over the age of 85, is something that kills us. Alzheimer's disease and other dementias is moving way up as we're getting an older population as things that kill us. So we have to pay attention to the things that we didn't pay attention to before. And chronic disease, particularly when you get three or four chronic diseases, one of the things that kills you is that the physicians you're seeing, all these specialists, keep on adding a drug until you reach the fact that you've got so many drugs that one of those drugs will give you a side effect and most probably in the end will kill you. So there are lots of things that kill us and we don't really know why. Eventually we wear out, but very few of us live to 120 to wear out.
We have a call from Wentzville I'll take after the break dealing with this very, very subject. That's Jana in Wentzville. Stay with us and we'll come back and take your calls when we come back. My guest is Dr. John Morley. We're talking geriatrics. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with the gerontologist, Dr. John Morley. Number of calls, and I want to get to Jana, as promised, in Wentzville, because I think Jana wants to pick up with where you were just a moment ago. So go ahead, Jana.
Yes, Dr. Morley. This problem with over-medication and the incorrect dosage of medications is something that hit our family directly this summer. My mother is 87 years old. She was seeing a very reputable internal medicine doctor. She'd been falling for over a year. He did not diagnose the cause of the falls, and eventually she fell. She incurred a subdural hematoma, almost died. But thanks to the geriatric team at St. Louis University Hospital, she was referred to a team of geriatric physicians. The cause of the falling was the medication, too much, the wrong kind. Now she's doing wonderfully, and I so much appreciate your work and this specialty. Thank you.
Over-medication is one of the major causes of falls, but there are many causes of falls. We now know that about a third of older people who fall are actually fainting and they don't realize they're fainting. We can actually fix them now with putting in a pacemaker or other devices that will slow down the cardiac arrhythmias they get. We run a clinic out at DePere for St. Louis University that specifically looks at falls, and that is, I think, an important component of the geriatric approach. Falls are clearly one of the things you need to come to a geriatrician. But I will give you one quick example. My most recent example was a patient who came to me on 26 medications. He had end-stage cancer with metastases in his head. His physician, who is a reputable, well-known physician, had told him if he stopped any of these medicines, he would die instantly. So we stopped all but one of them, and we're now 6 months later. He's living well, and he's not unhappy anymore, but he was extraordinarily unhappy before. Medications, even if they prolong your life, make you unhappy. So it's a trade-off sometimes, but in this case, it looks like we prolonged his life as well.
How much under the spell of the pharmaceutical industry is today's medical world, our physicians?
You know, it's a combination. I mean, the job of the pharmaceutical companies are to develop medicines that treat people, that may cure them and often do make a big difference for certain individuals. And then their job is to sell them because they work for stockholders and the stockholders accept a profit. The physician's job is to say, is this really better than the previous medicine? Unfortunately, physicians don't always read the literature quite as we're busy. We don't always have the time. We don't read the literature as well as we should. And obviously, a salesperson's job is to tell me the drug is much better. It's just like watching TV for anything, including Viagra now, which I guess is a drug. But, you know, this kills me when I look at these things that people sell on TV. Lots of them are nonsense. They're not drugs. They're anything. People sell stuff, and they cover it up in some way. Same thing with the drug companies.
And the disclaimers that come with them, and the disclaimers sometimes are longer than the actual content of the commercial.
But unfortunately, nobody listens to the disclaimers. All they hear is, this is a new drug. I have people coming to me all the time saying, I heard this on TV, I need this new drug. And, you know, maybe they do, but most of the time they don't.
Back to the phones. Chuck in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Well done right, huh?
Chuck, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I am. Benjamin Franklin said, to lengthen your life, lessen your meals. I wanted to know if that was true, and if so, what sort of contingencies, what are the most salient contingencies for which I'd have to compensate?
So caloric restriction is pretty good when you're 20 to about 60. All the data shows that when you get over the age of 60 and you cut down on what you eat, you actually have worse outcomes. So weight loss over the age of 60 is very bad for people, and that includes people who have diabetes, a disease that you would think would do better if you cut down on weight. Exercise, on the other hand, is good for everyone. So I think you have to look and realize that in my population I deal with, when I'm looking at people over the age of 60, here we don't want to restrict what we eat. We want to exercise so we can eat more, which is another way of looking at it. And the data is very good for being underweight being a real problem for older people.
Benjamin Franklin also said an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Was he right?
I think he was more right there. And any fruits and vegetables, five helpings a day, has been shown in every study to keep the doctor away and make you live longer.
And if there are no doctors, that's especially good advice. Right?
Well, it's good for the farming industry anyhow.
We have a tweet here from Amy who writes, in rural areas, older adults will likely need to use telemedicine, but teaching them digital literacy skills can help. Is that something that you've given any thought to?
So telemedicine is getting developed throughout Missouri, and it's going to be one of the ways where I think we can do a fair amount of good. When I was at the VA, we did some telemedicine down with Cape Girardeau, and it worked pretty well. You can do this. It requires often more than just the older adult. It requires somebody to help them at times. We're all going to get more and more telemedicine. We're going to be diagnosed on the computer, and that means at least you won't have to wait for the doctor anymore. Whether that'll be good or bad, I don't know. But the world is changing. It's going to be a big part of future medicine, particularly in rural areas, no question about it. But on the other hand, sometimes seeing the person makes all the difference, and particularly in geriatrics. One of my patients yesterday took me nearly 45 minutes to see. There was, truthfully, I hope they're not listening, no reason it took 45 minutes except that the caregivers were stressed. They wanted to talk about the problems, what they could do to make their loved one feel better, and how they could make them her do just much better. So you've got to recognize that there is this touch and feel piece of geriatrics that we have to fit in. And I, at least being an older person, am not very good at getting touching and feeling out of the computer. I find my Siri totally unlovable when I listen to her on the telephone.
But, you know, it brings to mind another issue, and this relates to all age groups, and that is a lot of people doing self-diagnosis, just Googling their symptoms. It seems to me that this is a dangerous thing to do.
Well, self-diagnosis or listening to Dr. Oz may be the two most dangerous things. As you know, Senator McCaskill went for Dr. Oz very appropriately because he basically was more or less doing something much worse than the pharmaceutical industry. He was talking to the industries out there who have other things they like to sell, and he was pushing them on his program. And Dr. Oz is a very respectable, very good cardiologist. People would listen to him. So you've got to be very careful where your information comes from. We do have a website at St. Louis University, an Aging Successfully website. You can get information from there. If you need questions, we can get a geriatrician to answer them. I answer emails because I get them all the time from my Post-Dispatch column. So if you find my email in the Post-Dispatch, you send me an email. I always answer them, though some days after the column, I wish I didn't have to come to work.
Let's take another call. Nathan in Jefferson City has been very patient. Go ahead, Nathan.
Hi. Actually, I'm in Jefferson County.
I'm sorry.
I'm a dentist at a community health center, and I see a lot of geriatric patients that suffer from side effects of polypharmacy. dry mouth and the other symptoms that come from that. So I want to get your input on just the lack of oral health as well for your geriatric patients. And we're also starting to research possibly doing some teledentistry to kind of triage geriatric patients in nursing homes where there's a very lack of care in those settings.
So dentistry is an absolute major need for older people. You know, I'm talking about geriatricians, but dentists and geriatric dentists, we trained two at St. Louis University when I first came here 25 years ago. The program disappeared, and we have failed since then to find anybody else. I think they're the only two people that have ever been trained in Missouri in geriatric dentistry. Everything you say is absolutely right. We need to train dental technicians to go out and work with older people. We need to find more dentists to be able to work with older people. And if somebody's got, you know, a dementia or cognitive problem, this makes the dentist's job a million times harder. So I totally agree with you. We need a lot more dental care. And in our animal model of Alzheimer's disease, in fact, if the animals get bad teeth, and we can create this, and people in Japan have been doing this, the dementia gets instantly much worse. So very important, not only for the mouth, but for the rest of the body.
I've heard this many times, that many of our health issues start right there in the mouth with any number of things that can go wrong. Let's take another call. Richard will join us. I'm not sure where he's calling from, but go ahead, Richard. Make your point, please.
Thank you. Dr. Morley, there is a study from the Missouri Department of Statistics on rural, urban, county-by-county needs. It focuses on infant mortality, especially low birth weights. And some commentators on that have said, well, what we should do is use a home visit program in the rural areas to visit these mothers, especially those that have signs of a low weight pregnancy. Can you comment on the policy issues, especially Medicare expansion, as to whether this, for rural, a home visit program, but focused on the extreme elderly, 85 and above, would be something you think is beneficial?
So home visit programs, particularly done by well-trained nurses or other healthcare professionals, can make a big difference. They can do the screening, and we can talk a little bit about that, because we really want people to screen and find the people at biggest risk. But the other issue you bring up, talking about the small for weight children who are being born, is that your aging starts before you're born, because people who are born small for weight, those very small babies, at 70 all have bad muscle disease. So you're guaranteed, if you're born with low weight, you're going to have muscle disease when you're 70. No matter what happens during your life, whether you lift weights or stuff like that, you get yourself into trouble. So we have to remember, we've got to continue to pay attention to the newborns, who will be the aging in 80 years' time. But we've also got to start doing good home care visits and managing to help people. We're trying to develop, and have been very successful in Perry County, developing programs there with the hospital in Perryville to start to try and provide more care for the elderly, either at the local hospital, and we're now looking at ways to give home care as well. This is where the future is going to be. It's certainly for the rural areas, people going out. We've got to go back to the old-fashioned nurse or healthcare provider who comes around from house to house for older people.
You mentioned the word screening, and I'm not quite sure who would be doing the screening. Are we talking about medical professionals or family members?
So screening can be done by anyone from basically a physician all the way down to a family member or a caregiver. There are simple screens that are available, something called the FRAIL, which the International Association of Geriatrics and Gerontology said everyone over 70 should have this done every year. It's very simple. You ask people, are you fatigued? Resistance, can you actually walk a flight of stairs? Aerobic, can you walk a block? Have you got more illnesses? Illnesses being very important because that means you've got polypharmacy, and L is loss of weight. The other screening that's important is for cognitive dysfunction and picking people up early. That one can be done either with the Alzheimer's disease screen 8 from WashU, which is a simple questionnaire, or there's the rapid cognitive screen that we've developed at St. Louis University. Most probably picks up a little bit more, but both of these should be being done in the doctor's office as a minimum, but really should be done at your local church, and they can be done by anyone. They don't need a specialist.
And if it's done outside of the purview of a specialist, you find out that you've got a problem, you go to a specialist.
Well, you go and see someone who's going to help you, maybe your primary care doctor. But if you go in and say, look, I know this is my problem, then the primary care doctor starts to pay attention to it.
Yeah. We're beginning to wind down, but I do want to get your comment on an email we had from Janice. It's lengthy. I can't read the whole thing. But she says, can your guests speak to the need for geriatric psychiatrists? Then she goes on to say that her mother had problems. It turns out that what her biggest problem was loneliness.
Yeah. So we have a greater shortage of geriatric psychiatrists than we do geriatricians. They are a major need. A lot of the things that can be fixed can be done by geriatricians or healthcare workers. We've developed this cognitive stimulation therapy for people with early Alzheimer's. It works very well. There are exercise programs that will work. And we need to keep the geriatric psychiatrist for the people who are enormously depressed and who can get fixed, or the people who have very difficult to handle dementias. Geriatric psychiatrists cannot handle all of the people who need them. So again, we've got to develop a healthcare professional force out there that are going to help people.
We talk a lot about dementia and Alzheimer's and the like, but you just mentioned another key. Depression is a very common problem for older people.
Depression occurs in Missouri in about 11% of older males and 18% of older females. That doesn't mean that they all need a drug. The best treatment for depression is some form of behavior therapy. So we need to develop behavior therapy centers where the people are so they can start with behavior therapy rather than giving them a drug. All the studies that said that these drugs that we give people for depression actually had behavior therapy associated with them. You need the behavior therapy, exercise therapy, then you can add the drugs. So this is fixable if we're prepared to put the money and the training into getting many more people involved in the care of the elderly.
Which brings us back to where we started. We need more people in the field. Dr. John Morley, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, sometimes a little bit depressing for those of us of a certain age, but always informative. Thank you, Dr. John Morley. Before we say goodbye, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. A federal judge in St. Louis has extended an order requiring Missouri law enforcement to give protesters a warning and reasonable chance to disperse before using tear gas. The judge granted the temporary injunction last month as part of a lawsuit brought by several people who have demonstrated at area protests over the August 9th killing of Michael Brown. The Archdiocese of St. Louis has named attorney Marie Kenyon, as director of a newly established Peace and Justice Commission. Archbishop Robert Carlson announced the commission in August and said its goal is to address societal issues such as poverty, racial tension, and lack of education. And the St. Louis County Council will meet today for the first time since Steve Stenger was sworn in as the new county executive. The council also features one new member, Republican Mark Harder, representing the 7th District. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Tomorrow on St. Louis On the Air, we'll talk with St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay on the state of St. Louis in 2015. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.